بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is session 22 and it's based on lesson 18. In the last session, we started talking about some introductory points. And we said that before we discuss the priority of sensation or intellect in respect to affirmations, at-tasdiqat, we need to get familiar with some expressions, with some technical terms. And the last one was number 4, and that was regarding the mode and the matter of propositions. We said that between every subject and predicate there is a matter of preposition, maybe necessity, maybe contingency, maybe impossibility. And when this is put into words, when this is expressed, we call it mod or jahatul qadiyya, mode of proposition. And this was the last point that we discussed. Now we want to talk about the 5th point, and that is regarding the unity that exists between subject and predicate. If there is no unity, if there is no link between subject and predicate, we cannot make a proposition. But there is no single form of unity. Sometimes the unity is a conceptual unity, and sometimes the unity is existential. For example, when I say man is human being, here man, which is subject, and man or human being, which is predicate, are identical in their concepts. So we have conceptual unity. So we say something in subject, and the same concept maybe in more details, maybe the same, exactly the same, is mentioned in predicate. So if I say man, is the same. If, for example, I say, instead of man in the predicate, I say thinking animal, say man is thinking animal, and I mean by thinking animal al-haywan al-natiq as a detailed account of man, including its common part and its unique and exclusive part. Common part between man and other forms of animal, and the unique or exclusive part which is exclusive to human beings. So in both cases, whether I say man is man or I say man is thinking animal or a speaking animal, I have made a proposition out of two concepts which are identical. This is a form of proposition. But there is another form of proposition which is more popular in our ordinary life and in our ordinary way of talking, and that is to have two concepts which may not be identical in their understanding or in their sense, but they have some existential relation. That is, in the reality outside, as being, to existence, they are identical. For example, if I say man is a truth seeker, Or if I say this man is a doctor, or this man is a philosopher, this man is a logician, this flower is yellow. Here, I am not suggesting that the concept of subject and the concept of predicate are identical. No. I am saying that these two concepts have now been concerned, have been applied to the same reality, the same thing which is man, the same thing is doctor, the same thing which is a flower is yellow. So here we have existential unity, or what is known in classic logic as حمل شاعر صناعي. So if you look at the screen, it's good to get familiar with the Arabic names as well. So we have الحمل الأولي Alham means predication, and then al-awwali. Al-awwali, which means primary, first. So alhamdul al-awwali means first predication or primary predication, and this is where A, when we say A is B, A and B are two identical concepts, like man is man. We have al-hamlu sha'i', which is also said sometimes al-hamlu sha'i' as-sana'i. Al-haml is predication, as-sha'i' which means popular, customary, and as-sana'i. Sana'i means related to sana'a, and sana'a means techniques, means science, discipline. This is when I say A is B, but A and B are not two identical concepts. They are two concepts which apply to the same instance, same existence. This is why some people say that here we have unity of instance, unlike al-hamlul awwali, primary predication, in which we have unity of concepts. Okay. The other point that we have here is a further division of al-hamlu sha'i', popular or common predication. Hamlu sha'i' is, as we said just now, a form of predication in which we have unity of instance. Subject and predicate are two concepts which apply to the same being. So we want to say that this flower, in reality, in the external world, is yellow. Okay? So, this is itself further divided into two. Sometimes, al-hamlu sha'i', or common predication, is a proposition in which the predicate is the concept of being or existence. If I say, this flower is existent, or this flower exists, makes no difference for us in this regard. What I am saying is that this flower has a reality. So I am predicating the concept of existence, of the subject of, for example, flower. This flower exists, or this flower is existent. So the predicate is existence. Sometimes, instead of saying that this exists, I want to say something more. I say this flower is yellow. When I say this flower is yellow, it means that it is more than just existence. I am giving you an extra piece of information. It's not only existent, but also it has this quality of being yellow. So when I say this flower is yellow, this is more complicated than just say this flower exists. This is why they call the first form al-haliyya al-basiqa and the second al-haliyya al-murakkaba. Please look again the screen. So al-hamlu shay'a as-sana'i, this one itself is divided into two. Al-haliyya al-basita. Al-haliyya means something related to hal. Hal is question mark or question noun. Basita means simple. So this is simple question. And al-haliyya al-murakkaba. Al-haliyya al-murakkaba, which is compound question. So if you want transliteration, al-haliyya, which means question, and al-basita, which means simple. Then for the other one, al-haliyya is the same. Al-murakkaba, which means compound, complicated. So we have simple question, we have compound question. We mean by simple question a sort of proposition in which we are informing our listener, other party, that something exists. But in compound proposition, we are informing the partner that something has a certain quality. It's not just a matter of being or not being. It's a matter of having some quality. So this is more than just existence. This is existence in a certain way. If I say this flower exists, it is simple. When I say this flower is yellow, it means that it exists with this quality. So this is also a terminology that you must learn. There is a discussion among some Western philosophers regarding the possibility of having simple question, al-haliyyat al-basita. Some have doubted the possibility of having existence as a predicate. But it seems that there is no problem, and the majority of philosophers accept that. Now, the seventh point is regarding al-haliyya al-murakkaba, compound question. This compound question itself is divided into two. Sometimes we have analytic proposition and sometimes we have synthetic. We mean by analytic what is known in Arabic as at-tahlili. So al-qadiyya at-tahliliyya or analytic proposition is a sentence, a proposition in which the concept of predicate is possible to be derived from the concept of subject. when I say, for example, all fathers are male, it's something that we understand it very easily, because we know that part of the concept of father is to be male. You cannot be father without being male, or being mother without being female. So we call this sort of proposition al-qadiyya at-tahliliyya. Tahlil means analysis. It means that if you analyze the subject, you will reach the predicate. But we have also synthetic propositions. Al-qadaya at-tarkibiyya. Tarkib means synthesis. It means that predicate is not just part of subject. It's something new. So in the sentence, you have combined two new things, two things which are separate. If I say, for example, my father is generous. So to be generous is not a necessary part of being a father. This is unlike to be male. To be male is part of being father. But to be generous, to be, for example, a scholar, to be tall, to be fat, all these qualities which may or may not be there for the subject make the sentence or proposition synthetic. This is very important in epistemology, because the whole question of epistemology for people like Kant and empiricists like Hume has been to show whether there are some synthetic propositions which are not dependent upon senses. Inshallah, we will gradually get more familiar with these ideas. To be synthetic, because if it is just analytic, so you are not informing your partner about something new. In sciences, in technology, in philosophy, we need to inform our partner about something new. So we need synthetic propositions. And we also want to see whether we can have synthetic propositions which are not based on senses or not. Empiricists say no. But rationalists like Kant say yes. So now the question is how to have some synthetic propositions without dependence upon senses. Inshallah, we will have our own discussion about this matter later. So when we divide propositions into analytic and synthetic, it's not just because we want to fill our time, we want to waste our time. No, it's because these are very important for us. In this way, we can distinguish between different forms of propositions, and we can find which one is the one that we need if we want to have certain knowledge about the world. The eighth point, before I start eighth point, regarding the seventh point, as I said, analytic and synthetic questions or propositions are sometimes based on experiences, on senses, and sometimes not. I just would like to add the names. If a sentence, a proposition, is based on experiment, on sensual knowledge, this is called a posteriori. And a posteriori means something which comes later, ma ta'akhkhar, which means something which is preceded by experiments. And it is opposite a priori, which means something prior to experiment. So what we need to have philosophy, to have metaphysics, to have theology, is to have some a priori synthetic propositions. Means some form of synthetic proposition which is not based upon experiment. Because if it is based upon experiment, then it will not be certain. We will talk about this, inshallah, later. Point 8. In classic logic, every proposition is said to be either self-evident or non-self-evident. Sometimes they call it speculative. We mean by self-evident al-badihi. So al-qadiyya al-badihiyya or al-qadaya al-badihiyya in plural form means a proposition which is self-evident. Something that you know for sure, you do not need to prove that, and it's clear and obvious. But al-qadaya al-nadariyya, speculative propositions, are those which are not evident. You need to argue for them. You need to prove them. So you must use some self-evident propositions to prove this one. Or you may use some other speculative propositions which previously have been shown to be dependent upon self-evidence propositions. So you have self-evidence, and this is the first level. Then you have speculative propositions. Then upon this, you will have further speculative. So all speculative propositions, directly or indirectly, must end with self-evident propositions. This is something which is very clear, and we don't need that much discussion about this. What is in need of more discussion is to know more about different kinds, different types, different sorts of self-evident propositions. Usually they say that there are 6 types of self-evident propositions. Please be very careful. So in books on classic logic, they say that propositions which are self-evident are 1 of 6. The first is primary self-evident propositions. Al-qadaya al-awwaliyya. If you look at the screen, again. So you have al-qadiyya. Al-qadiyya is the single form of al-qadaya, which means proposition. Al-badihiyya. Al-qadiyya. Al-badihiyya. Okay? This means self-evident. Proposition. Okay? This may be sometimes what we call it al sorry this should be double yeah al awwaliyya, and the plural form is al awwaliyat. Al-Badihiyya, Al-Awwaliyya, which means primary. And this is the most obvious form of self-evident propositions. And we mean by this a proposition whose approval, whose confirmation only depend on conceiving subject and conceiving predicate. You don't need any proof. You don't need any argument. As soon as you have a clear understanding of the concept of subject and the concept of predicate, then you will confirm the relation between these two. For example, the impossibility of having two contradictory things together, to have is and is not together. This is impossible. If someone understands the concept of contradiction and the concept of impossibility, he will, without any hesitation, without need to argue, he will approve, he will endorse, he will confirm, he will affirm that contradiction is impossible. Or, for example, if someone understands the concept of whole and the concept of part, would quickly say that every part is smaller than its whole, the whole to which it belongs, to which it belongs, or the whole is bigger than its parts. So these are self-evident propositions, which are called al-awwaliyyah, or if they are plural, al-awwaliyyat, primary self-evident propositions. And if you want to define, you could say these are some self-evident propositions which do not need any argument. The only thing that we need is to conceive the subject and the predicate. As soon as we conceive them, we will have this relation established in our mind. But it's not always as easy as this. We will have also to know, to consider cases in which we don't have primary self-evident propositions. We have secondary self-evident propositions. And secondary self-evident propositions are six. So secondary athanaviyya. Secondary means athanaviyya. Al-qadaya al-badihiyya athanaviyya. Okay. These are one of six types. Sometimes they are based on senses, al-hassiyat, al-hassiyat. So these are based on senses. I see in front of me a flower. I see in front of me a blackboard, a desk, something else. So these are things that I know for sure. These are clear. But the reason that I know them is because one of my five senses make me understand them. The second is al-wajdaniyat. Al-wajdaniyat means something that I understand through my conscience, a sort of knowledge which is by presence. I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel sorry, I feel hopeful. These are things that I understand, these are self-evident things, but the reason that I know them is my conscience or knowledge by presence. The third is al-hadsiyat. al had siyat. This is through a speculation. Al hats, through a speculation. And here we mean by hats something very special. You know, sometimes you have something in your mind. Automatically something comes to your mind without you have argued or, for example, thought about it. But automatically the result comes to your mind. And it has been said that this is part of nubuwwah. This is part of prophecy. Sometimes, you know, God reveals the truth to our mind. So without having any need to think about something, automatically the answer comes to our mind and we become certain about something. So you hear something, then automatically the answer comes to your mind. This is called al-hats. This is also considered as one of the secondary self-evident propositions. Then we have al-fitriyat. Al-fitriyat. This is through our nature. Al-fitra means a sort of creation, the way that we are created. And they mean by al-fitriyat something which is innate, something which is natural for us. And they say these propositions are those propositions whose argument, whose proof automatically comes with them. قَضَايَا قِيَاسَاتُهَا مَأَهَا. So here in these innate or al-fitri propositions, automatically you can prove something without need to think about it. Automatically the answer comes, but the answer with argument. So the argument is there. For example, if you want to argue that 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. So the argument is clear. You don't need to think about it. The other form of secondary self-evident propositions is at-tajribiyat or al-mujarrabat. Sometimes they say al-mujarrabat or at-tajribiyat. This means a sort of proposition which is through experiment. The difference between al-hissiyat and at-tajribiyat is that in al-hissiyat we have something individual, some particulars that we know by our senses. Like, for example, I see this flower or this blackboard in front of me. In at-tajribiyat or al-mujarrabat, they mean some universal truths. Like, for example, the fact that water boils in 100 centigrades. Those things which are results of sensation or experimentation, but they are also universal. And finally, al-mutawatirat. Al-mutawatirat. And they mean by al-mutawatirat, which has been translated by the translator as testimony, knowledge through testimony. They mean by mutawatirat something which is frequently narrated. The literal meaning of tawatur in Arabic is frequency. Sometimes something is so much narrated to us, so frequently transmitted to us, that we become certain about it. For example, if hundreds of people bear witness that they have seen the moon of Ramadan or the moon of Shawwal, so we will become certain. Because it's possible that one person, two person, three people, four people may make mistake or may tell lies. But when you have massive number of people, hundreds of people who do not know each other, who come from different backgrounds, who have nothing in common between themselves. So when we hear from all these people, we will become certain that the moon is viewed, is seen. This is also about hadith. You know, we have al-hadith al-mutawatir, and that is when each generation of narrators is so large in number that you cannot suppose they have made mistake or they have told lies. So this hadith becomes self-evident. So for example, the first generation who have narrated from the Prophet have been 100 people. Then second generation, another 100 people. Third generation, another 100 people. So 100 from 100 from 100. So we will make sure that this hadith must be certainly and obviously said by the Prophet himself. Of course, we cannot fix the number to say it must be 100 or it must be 50. The number must be so high that there leaves no place for doubt or suspicion. Okay. Traditionally, it has been suggested that there are these six secondary propositions which are self-evident. But the author has doubt about this, and he says that certainly primary propositions are self-evident, but out of these six, he says that we accept only al-wajdaniyat, which is based on knowledge by presence, as self-evident proposition. He doesn't endorse al-hissiyat or al-tajrabiyat or al-fitriyat or al-hissiyat or al-mutawatirat as something which is self-evident, which is necessarily true, which is impossible to be false. And we will discuss about this matter, inshallah, later. So, the whole question here is whether, after saying all these, whether in our affirmations we are totally and entirely dependent upon our senses, upon sensation, or we may have some affirmations which depend on intellect and not sensation. So this is the question. If you remember, we had this question about notions, about ideas, about tasavvurat. And in this lesson 18, we were supposed to address this issue regarding affirmations. But we needed to know something more before we could start this. Now, this is the time in which we must focus on our main issue, and that is whether sensation or intellect is superior in regarding or respect to affirmations. Some people who are empiricists or positivists, they give priority to sensations, and some people give priority to the intellect. Without going into details about their discussions, the author says that let's see what we ourselves take to be true. He says, regarding al-awwaliyat, primary self-evident propositions, it's true that we do not need sensation. So as soon as we have the subject and the predicate conceived, we can affirm whether the relation exists or not. We do not need sensation. We may need sensation so so that we can be able to conceive the subject or predicate. But this is something else. For affirmation itself, we do not need any sort of sensation in respect to primary self-evident propositions. It is also true about analytic propositions, which may be a form of primary self-evident proposition. Because when we say all fathers are male or all fathers are married, so we don't need sensation, because the concept of predicate is possible to be known by analysis of subject. We don't need sensation. Our intellect is sufficient for us. The same is true about Alhamlul Awwali, primary predication, in which you have conceptual unity. So you don't need for affirmation to refer to senses. The same thing is also true about Al-Wajdaniyat, which is based upon knowledge by presence. When I feel happy, when I feel sad, I feel sorry, I feel hopeful, we don't need sensation for affirmation. Okay? So this is also something that we can have without any need for sensation in respect to affirmation. But when I want to affirm that something exists outside, here of course I need perception. I need perceptual knowledge or sensational knowledge. And here our affirmation is based upon a cooperation between our sensation and our intellect. Sensation is needed, but intellect is also important. Without having intellect involved, we cannot come to know anything, even the particular things. And this is something proved by Muslim philosophers like Allama Tabatabai, like Mullah Sadra and others, that our sensations must be supported, must be backed up by intellectual arguments and intellectual proofs. So even here we need intellect, but of course we need also sensation. The same is true about universal sensational knowledge, like every water in ordinary circumstances boils in 100 centigrades. This is universal truth. And this is also based on sensation, but it is also based on intellect. Especially whenever you have universality, whenever you have necessity, you must have some intellectual argument. Because there is no way to prove universality and necessity through sensation. Because sensation only informs us about individual cases. But whether all cases are like this or not, and whether it must be like this or not, is something that needs intellectual argument. The last thing is when we want to have a double knowledge, that is, a knowledge about our knowledge, that is, a knowledge about the impossibility of our first knowledge to be false. Here again, we need our intellect. Because if I say, for example, this flower is yellow, how can I make sure that this flower cannot be non-yellow? It's through my intellect. It is my intellect that tells me that if this is yellow, it cannot be contradictory. So here also we need the intellect. In this way, we have finished lesson 18, and inshallah, in the next session, we will talk about a very important topic in epistemology, and that is about the value of knowledge. And some of these discussions will be repeated, but in more details. And our aim will be to see whether we can have some knowledge which is immune from doubt, from suspicions, and can be strong, can be taken as certain and evident articles of facts or not. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.